Welcome to the Deep Dive. We dig into the sources you send us to pull out the really vital, sometimes surprising, insights. Today, we're looking at what can be a pretty intimidating journey, getting federal tax exemption, specifically that much sought-after 501c status.
Right. It's a bureaucratic hurdle, no doubt. But the materials we have today, focusing on the approach from Limitless Ideas Consulting, show a process that's, well, a lot more involved than just paperwork.
Yeah, and that's what struck me.
We're digging into their client portal materials. They describe it as a kind of personalized digital headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea isn't just filing forms. It's this whole roadmap combining, you know, legal strategy, tech, and even organizational psychology.
Organizational psychology. Okay, we definitely need to get into that.
Yeah, it aims to take this huge task of getting compliant and staying compliant and break it down into manageable steps.
Okay, so our mission today is to unpack the really unique demands this specific process puts on a new organization. I mean, we all expect to need articles of incorporation, right?
Sure, the basics.
But who thinks they'll need to take, like the Enneagram or the five-factor model personality test just for the IRS? It seems unusual.
It does initially.
So we need to figure out why these kinds of deep organizational dives are part of their process, how this portal guides clients through all the regulatory hoops, and, you know, what exact steps turn a vision into something federally recognized.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the why. Why is the status so important in the first place? Why go through all this?
Right. Let's quickly ground ourselves in the value proposition. For leaders starting something charitable, the 501c3 isn't really the end goal itself. It's the vehicle.
The vehicle for impact.
Precisely. Federal tax exemption fundamentally is the IRS saying, okay, your work charitable, educational, religious, scientific, it serves the public good.
Mm-hmm.
And that stamp of approval, it unlocks some massive advantages.
Absolutely. The documents lay out 7 benefits, but let's maybe zero in on the, say, top 3 game changers for an organization's survival. First, the obvious one, tax advantage.
Yeah. Number one, being exempt from federal income tax on your activities means more money goes straight to the mission, not Uncle Sam.
Which is just critical for resources. Then the second huge one is funding eligibility. So many grants, private foundations, government funding, they simply require 501c status, period.
You're locked out otherwise.
Completely locked out of huge funding pools. And third, it totally changes the getting landscape because of tax deductibility.
Ah, the donor incentive.
Exactly. Letting individuals and corporations claim a deduction for their donations. That's a powerful motivator. It's, well, foundational for scaling support.
Makes perfect sense.
And beyond those big three, there's the public trust and credibility factor. Having that status shows you've passed a tough IRS review. It signals accountability, legitimacy. That really helps attract partners, volunteers, community support.
Yeah, that legitimacy piece feels crucial.
Definitely. And the materials also mention some, you know, smaller but still handy perks like cheaper postal rates, access to certain government contracts, things like that.
Okay, so the value is definitely there. It justifies the effort involved. But that effort, the complexity, that's where things can go wrong. So how does this client portal actually act as a navigator? How does it stop people getting lost?
Well, its main job is basically translating the dense IRS rulebook into clear, actionable steps. Think of it as a one-stop shop. It gives you templates, detailed instructions, reference materials, all designed to make sure the client meets every single governance and operational standard the IRS is looking for.
And I noticed the system emphasizes practical support, too, like direct contact with the consultants, tracking your progress in real time, getting coaching notes. That seems key.
It is. And crucially, it's also a secure place to keep all the required documents. The source material is very clear about the, let's call them, digital housekeeping rules. You have to be careful with sensitive federal info.
Right. Security and trust.
Exactly. They build trust up front. For instance, they explicitly state private info is safe, never sold. They also enforce ethical conduct like the golden rule for communication and zero tolerance for anything illegal. That's non-negotiable in this space.
Hmm. Setting that integrity baseline. It makes sense, especially given the deep dive they require later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, speaking of structure, they don't just ask for documents. They seem to impose this multi-phase roadmap. It forces the client to build the organization from the inside out. This is where it gets really interesting.
Right.
Let's look at the structure they impose on the client.
Right, the roadmap. It starts logically with phase one, client intake and governance. This is all about getting the legal and ethical framework solid before diving into the heavy lifting.
So what's involved there immediately?
Immediate steps, foundational ones. ownership authorization, signing a mutual non-disclosure agreement, doing a full know your client or KYC intake.
Okay, KYC, just so everyone's clear, that's the standard due diligence, right?
Yeah.
Verifying identity, checking suitability, preventing fraud. Banks use it all the time.
Exactly. It shows that even the intake is designed with accountability in mind. Then they also need clear client goals and outcomes defined and a formal corporate resolution. These are the legal green lights, basically. Authorizing the process, clarifying the mission internally.
Okay, standard legal stuff. But then we get to phase two, recommended assessments. And this is where, honestly, I did a double take. The source materials mandate personality and aptitude tests. Why on earth does getting a tax ID need the Enneagram or the five-factor model? It seems personal.
It does seem unusual at first glance, I agree, but I think this might be the, well, the clever part of their holistic approach. The thinking seems to be that the IRS isn't just looking at your budget. They're assessing your ability to operate ethically and effectively for the long haul, your governance.
So internal team dynamics could impact compliance?
Potentially, yes. If the leadership team is prone to conflict or poor communication or, you know, bad decision-making because of internal friction, how can that organization reliably fulfill its public service mission over time? That's the underlying question, I think.
So the five-factor model, assessing things like conscientiousness, openness, and the Enneagram mapping core motivations and fears. These aren't just HR tools here. They're almost organizational risk assessment tools.
That seems to be the logic. By including things like the multiple intelligence test, learning style test, even a basic personality type test, they're essentially auditing the people running the show, not just the spreadsheets. It's about making sure the leadership understands its own dynamics, strengths, weaknesses, potential blind spots. It builds a more resilient internal structure, one that can hopefully withstand regulatory scrutiny and operational pressures down the road.
That really reframes the whole thing. It's like an audit of operational readiness before it's an audit of financials. Okay, let's jump ahead slightly to phase four, organizing structure. This looks like it's focused on making sure the entity can actually function as like a proper employer and taxpayer, even if it is tax exempt.
Spot on. Phase four tackles all those necessary governmental and regulatory pieces that keep the entity running after it's formed. The materials mention things like state structure sessions, making sure you're aligned with state-level rules, too.
And then there's the whole employer phase. That feels like a big piece people might not think about initially for a nonprofit.
Oh, it's critical. This is where they handle getting the ENTIN, the federal tax ID number. They confirm e-verify qualifications if needed, sort out Social Security Administration details, meet Department of Labor requirements. Basically, it ensures that the moment the organization hires its first employee, all the legal and financial plumbing is already in place and compliant.
That makes sense. Avoids headaches later. And the list of permits and licenses in this phase is pretty intense. Federal, state, local, industry-specific, even private company permits.
Wow. Yeah, it's thorough. It really drives home the point that they're helping build a fully compliant business entity that just happens to have a charitable mission at its core.
Okay, I get it now. The phases aren't just about getting the IRS letter. They're about building something that can actually sustain that status because it meets all the governance and operational demands.
Exactly. The IRS cares about continuity and ongoing compliance, not just the initial application.
So that roadmap sets the client up not just with a successful filing, but with a whole functioning compliant operation. Okay, now what about after the application's in? Phase six, business protection. This sounds like insurance, essentially.
It is, in a broad sense. It tackles the risks, intellectual and financial, right after launch. So on the IP side, they cover intellectual property, federal copyright, trademark, patent basics, plus state and industry-specific IP stuff.
Which is vital for a mission-driven group, protecting the brand, the program ideas.
Absolutely. And then on the risk management side, it's about getting the right corporate or industry insurance, sorting out any necessary surety bonds. This is the safety net, right? Making sure the mission can keep going, even if unexpected legal issues or operational problems pop up.
Okay, so protection is covered. What about keeping the organization healthy and growing long-term? Does the portal help with that?
It does. The source material points to ongoing resources provided through the portal after the 501c3 is granted. Things like updated checklists for grant eligibility, templates for tracking donations, practical tools.
And I saw mention of ongoing governance compliance updates. That seems huge, given how often rules change.
Critical. Regulations shift constantly at federal and state levels. Having a central place for updates means the organization doesn't have to spend precious resources constantly tracking that stuff themselves.
Frees them up to to focus on the actual mission.
Exactly. The whole goal here seems to be keeping the organization perfectly positioned for future opportunities, big federal grants, state programs, major donor drives. By centralizing these resources, the organization can focus its energy on building its credibility, serving its community, and really leveraging that tax-exempt status.
So what does this all mean when you pull it all together?
I think it means that getting federal tax exemption, at least through this kind of guided, structured system, is way more than just filling out IRS Form 1023. It demands real operational maturity from day one. The unique thing here seems to be this guided pathway that forces you to address everything simultaneously. The technical application, yes, but also the fundamental organizational structure, the leadership dynamics via those psychological assessments, and then the long-term protection and compliance needs.
So it transforms the whole process. Exemption isn't just a bureaucratic stamp. It becomes the outcome of building a truly robust, compliant, and self-aware organization designed for long-term impact. It sort of bakes integrity right into the DNA.
Well put. And that brings us to a final thought, maybe something provocative for you, the listener, to chew on. If achieving federal tax exemption increasingly requires this kind of deep organizational introspection right down to personality tests for leadership, what does that signal about the future? Could regulatory bodies start valuing organizational psychology and team cohesion almost as much as financial health when they assess public benefit? And if so, how might that change the way leaders prepare to launch any kind of venture aiming for serious impact? Mm.